Success Insight shares the stories of the people with passion and drive who make things happen in the world. Here's your host, Howard Fox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Success Insight podcast. Today's episode is another addition to our Outdoor Adventure Series. The Outdoor Adventure Series celebrates individuals and families, businesses and organizations that seek out and promote the exploration of the great outdoors. Our guest today is Chris Milgate. Chris is an outdoor journalist who covers outdoor and natural resource stories for print and video media outlets nationwide. These include PBS, USA Today, Field & Stream, and East Idaho Outdoors, and I'm sure there's others on that list as well. Now, she is the founder of Tightline Media, and she is presently working on a film and book about salmon migration from the ocean to Idaho. Chris is a member of the Outdoor Writers Association of America, a lifetime member of Trout Unlimited. She's an elementary school volunteer and a former Idaho Falls Parks and Recreation Commissioner. And she's an avid fly fisher, an ultra trail runner, and a youth hockey coach. I'm wondering if she wears an S on her chest. Chris, it's a pleasure to have you on the Success Insight podcast.
Oh, thanks for inviting me today.
Fantastic. And for our listeners, I met Chris through, and I alluded to this a minute ago, the Outdoor Writers Association, as we have been getting more involved in our podcast and the Outdoor Adventure Series. The Outdoor Writers Association is just a phenomenal place with some very talented writers, both as former journalists, book writers, video photographers, and really just some amazing folks. And Chris, it's an absolute pleasure just really that you have agreed to be on the podcast. And I mean, just kind of notching up the quality. I mean, the bar is getting higher here when I have, after seeing some of your work. And so again, thank you so much.
Well, now the pressure's on. I better come up with some solid answers.
Yeah, definitely have to do that. So I have to admit, you are probably only the fourth person I've ever met from Idaho.
Oh, at least you know I'm from Idaho and not Iowa or Ohio. That comes up a lot.
Is that right? You say, oh, you must be right next to Iowa, yeah. Or something.
Yeah, no. Yes, I am from Idaho. I'm honored to be one of the fourth person that you've interviewed from here. It's a beautiful state.
Yeah, and I would have to imagine you grew up being outdoors and just having an appreciation for the great outdoors.
I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay.
So I live about now in Idaho, about 3 hours from my hometown, but I'm also an hour and a half from Yellowstone. And oh, wow. I have wilderness all around me. So there's a reason why I stay based in Idaho. But growing up in Salt Lake City, Utah, the outdoors are very important there as well. So I grew up playing in the Wasatch Mountains, which when the Olympics came around, that put that place on the map for everybody. And while I miss living so close to the mountains, I wouldn't trade where I live now for those mountains, because now I live by the Snake River. And so that's kind of how I can just figure out wherever it is I'm going to live, the natural resource is what I'm going to connect with. And I really want to know about that place. And even when I'm working, wherever I am, you know, a historian wants to go somewhere and learn about the history of the place. I go somewhere and want to learn about the water and the woods and the natural resource and the landscape. Those are the things that I want to know about. And that's how I connect with my sense of place. And so growing up, outdoors was always where I felt most comfortable. It's surprising to hear now, but I grew up painfully shy. And I was terrified of beards. So,
you know, you did confirm it, beards. And when I first read that, I said, oh, I wonder if that's a typo. Thinking bears.
But yeah, you think beards. It would be bears. No, it is indeed beards. I was painfully shy. I couldn't look you in the eye. I never wanted to talk to you. And if you looked at me, I would look away. And then I would wait for you to look away. And then I would spy on you. But I didn't want to visit with you. And beards really scared me, because to me, it meant that they had something to hide. Their face was hiding something. And now, obviously, I realize that that's just not the case. People without beards can be lacking character as well. So the beard does not have anything to do with the character of the person. And now I talk so much, I end up with swollen vocal cords, and I run around with beards in the woods all the time.
So, I was going to say, you know, beards and being in the great outdoors, they kind of go hand hand in hand. You know,
yeah.
And you and Ken Keffer would have to have, might not have a conversation. But for our listeners, Ken was on our podcast way back when, and he's got a very, I think he was born with that beard. But
yeah, he has a lot of facial hair, and I'm quite used to it now. And he's one of the friendliest people I know, beard or no beard.
Very good. Now, as you were growing up, did you have brothers and sisters, you know, family that enjoyed the great outdoors?
I do have brothers and sisters and a mom and dad. And when we grew up in Utah, we would camp and hike. And, you know, a lot of people think that I did a lot of hunting and fishing growing up. And that's not the case. I grew up camping, certainly. Hiking was the big thing. I didn't hunt with my dad. I didn't fish with my dad. I hiked with my dad. And my dad is notorious for always being lost. So following my dad meant going on some lost wander where we saw magnificent things in the outdoors, but we didn't know exactly where we were when we saw those things. And my dad would never admit that he was lost. So we would just wander. And so I learned to have patience for the outdoors and for the wild. Sometimes you have to wait a long time for that elk to step out of the trees before you can get a good shot of video of it. I learned that patience when I was little following my dad. I also learned persistence because he would just keep going and say, just around the next bend. But there was really no, he didn't know how far away we were from
there. There's a lot of next bends out there.
Yeah, right. So I had to be persistent and stick with it and have a large amount of endurance for a little girl. Sure. That now helps me through my work as well. Some days are long. Sometimes you are waiting 15 hours for that grizzly bear to step into the meadow. And so you've got to have that patience and that persistence and endurance. And all of that was built into me at a very young age just by following my dad on a hiking trail.
That's wonderful. And so I do have a safety question.
Yep.
As I moved out west and tried in from Chicago, I had the desire to go and camp out underneath the stars. So I've got Mojave National Preserve, Lake Mead, Death Valley, Red Rock Canyon right near me. And if I was to go hiking, yeah, though I don't know how to use it yet, which is kind of bad, a compass. So you and your dad are going on these unlimited hikes just around the bend. When did you learn how to use a compass so you'd actually knew where you were going?
That is a great question. So when you were bringing up safety, I was thinking about all kinds of things like bear spray, hydration.
Oh, I did that too.
Yeah, but you're down to the basics of a compass. For me, when you grow up in Salt Lake City, Utah, you get your bearings easily because the Wasatch Mountains are in the east and the Okra Mountains are in the west. And anywhere I work in the country, I will visualize those mountains in my head. And at high noon, I'll still know which way is east and west. And that's partly because of the mountain ranges I grew up with. So I'm pretty good at finding my way out in the outdoors. Where I get hung up is in underground parking lots. I will lose my car every time.
you probably, I know when you go out, scan safety. Now, I don't have one. Is those satellite little buzzers that you flip when you're in, there's an emergency so people can find you. Do you carry one of those?
When I'm working, no, I'm okay with going off grid. I know what I need to stay alive and be safe.
Okay.
I do carry my phone because I learned from search and rescue a long time ago. If you need help, a lot of times, even without a signal, you can send a text and eventually it will ping. But the important factor here is to not send help. You need to say whether you're injured or not and where you are is as close to what you think you are. They need some specific information. And if you can get that out in a text, it will go long before a phone call will go.
Okay.
Now, if I'm living on a raft for a week in the wilderness, that's a different story. There usually is one person in the party that has a phone that can do satellite GPS connection. But, you know, like this last weekend, I was off grid camping with my family and our phones didn't work up there. But we had them, and I knew that they would send a text if we needed to. And we had mapping systems on our phone. And if I'm flying my drone, I use my phone to plug in to actually control the device as a certified pilot. So those things are with me, and chances are pretty high in an emergency, you're going to be able to send that text out and eventually it will hit. Some people carry GPS and satellite receivers and all kinds of different things. And that's I think that has a lot to do with their comfort level. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting sometimes to be off grid. And I think that is good for our mental state.
Yes,
to
it
be
is.
Off grid. So, but if you feel like you're not comfortable unless you have a way to connect to the civilization, then certainly you should carry that. And I would never dismiss the value of carrying that.
Sure.
But there are times when I purposely want to be disconnected.
Most definitely. And I appreciate that. And I've never been truly disconnected for more than a couple hours. You go out to Death Valley or Mojave, you're not talking to anybody. But I do have a question. And eventually I am going to circle back to your career and how you got to where you got to. But one last little question about the family. You went off grid last weekend. How does I know you have, I know you have at least have a son.
I have two boys.
Two boys. How do the boys like being off grid with mom and dad and just kind of enjoying the great outdoors and no smartphones and video games and things like that?
Our kids have grown up having outdoor experiences in every season. And a lot of people, when they have kids, they decide that doing the outdoor adventure as a family is just too hard. And I won't dismiss that. It is hard, especially when they're really little and you're trying to fish and they're falling in the river. Mm. And you have to carry extra clothes. And what the reality is, you fish less, but you still go to that river because you want to build in that habit of them feeling comfortable outside. So even on those days when we didn't catch a lot of fish and our kids fell in the water and we had to change their clothes 20 times, we were still out. And now that they're older, I noticed even this last weekend, I didn't carry a pack when we did day hikes. The boys carried everything, even my water, and I could just take it from them. So you get payback later on when they get a little older. But when they're little, it is hard. And it does take a little more effort on your part to be out. But the important thing is to be out so that as they grow up, they feel comfortable outside. Now, no doubt, on the drive to where we're going off grid, they're both playing on their iPads or their phones or whatever in the backseat. That is true. They're doing that in the truck. And my truck is wired to charge batteries when it's turned off because I need to be able to charge my camera batteries overnight. So they know that they can plug in and charge their device, even when my truck is turned off sitting in camp. And maybe they can access a game, but they also know that the deal is once we get to our destination, the devices get put away. They're there for an emergency or they're there if we decide we're going to have a reading hour at night or something, but they know that it's time to disconnect. And the reason we're going out here is not to bring all those things with us. They recognize that there's a boundary there and they're pretty good about following it.
I love that. And I have to admit a little bit of envy because growing up in the Midwest, you know, we had our parks and we had some very beautiful areas and it just, the outdoor experience was never, or it was minimally a part of my life. And it was not until coming out here in my current age and just kind of, you know, being out of these beautiful national parks and exploring and hiking, et cetera. So being able to grow up like that and have that experience wired into me, you know, is definitely, there's a little bit of envy. And I think your boys definitely are going to appreciate that, you know, when they get into adults and have their own kids someday.
Yeah. I mean, in a month from now, we'll be rafting a section of the Salmon River that is required for entry that you have a permit and only 7 boats get to go a day, 7 parties per day. And we're one of those 7 on that day. And our boys will do that whole wilderness stretch. There's no roads in there, no driving in. It's raft only. And they're going to do it all by kayak. And there's rapids. There's all kinds of things. You sleep on the beach, you find old homesteads. And that is what they are growing up with. And I love that that's what they're growing up with because those are the things that are important to me.
That's fantastic. That is truly fantastic. Now, for our listeners, I would love for them to have an appreciation of your background and how you came to kind of pursue this outdoor journalism and just begin to write and create around the outdoor space and these stories and the video. Was it an aha moment, or was this kind of a very smooth glide path for your journey? How did that start?
Well, there's a couple of different factors that go into where I have arrived, as you would call it today, because in my mind, I've never arrived. I'm always working for more. I'm not working hard enough, fast enough. I'm not shooting well enough. I'm not writing strong enough. I'm always after how to make the story better. But for your sake, when we talk about arriving at where I'm at now, it's an interesting backstory because growing up shy, I mean, no one thought I was going to be a reporter. Are you kidding me? How do you put a shy girl on TV when she can't even look you in the eye? Well, I didn't have an answer to that question when I was little, but I knew what I was going to do. And I knew I was going to be a storyteller. I was going to tell you stories that matter. And I was going to tell them in an honest, accurate way. That's what a reporter does, period. It doesn't matter how much you classify media today. A traditional reporter is expected to deliver a fair and accurate story. And that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do it about anything and everything. So I knew that I was going to be a storyteller when I grew up. And I also knew that I was going to do it through a visual medium. And I chose TV because video is movement. A lot of times today you see people call themselves filmmakers and they're actually photographers. They take still photos. And the reason you're seeing so much slow-mo in today's films is because I think that there's a lot of photographers that are transitioning into video because they have a video option on their camera, but they don't really think visually in movement. They still think in still frames. And so that slow-mo action looks right to them. I don't shoot in slow-mo. Action needs to be in real time. That is how I see the world. So I chose video right out the gate as my storytelling media because of the way it portrays action. I don't need to describe that you have a plaid shirt on because you can see the plaid shirt in the video. And that I wanted to have the other details come through video. So I knew I was a storyteller and I knew it was going to be video. By the time I got to college, I had my major. It was broadcast journalism and I never wavered and I never looked back. And I had my first TV job in news before I graduated. And then I moved around the country for a decade working for one TV station or another. I ended up working for every network but CBS. That's just how things shake out in TV news. I was the lead live reporter for every newscast, 5, 6, 10 o'clock. I was meeting a dozen new strangers a day, turning 5 stories a day. And that was what I loved. But then when I was in the newsroom, I thought that was it. You know, this is where I was going to be. I didn't really realize eventually I would be my own boss as a freelance journalist. That was the aha surprise that came later. The storytelling aspects and using video to tell those stories were always going to be there. I just had to figure out how to get over being shy and learn how to use cameras and learn how to edit and tell stories. And the writing element was always pretty strong naturally in me. I can write for newspaper, magazine, TV, radio, web. I know how to write for all of them and they all take a little bit of a different tool, but I could always write. That was always what I could do. And so I wanted to apply that. So at about the 10-year mark, I started to see a pattern in my work. And that was that I was drawn to the outdoor stories. And there was not a beat for the outdoors. I would cover crops and I would cover crime. But in between that, I would get those outdoor stories, find a news angle on them, and turn them into the top story for the newscast. And frankly, a lot of times people in the newsroom weren't interested in going out and getting in the mud. And I always kept boots in my trunk of my car so I could go from the courtroom to a farmer's field and be able to do another story because I had what I needed. So I started finding those outdoor stories and making those matter because to me, the outdoor beat did matter. And there are legitimate stories with our natural resources. I mean, I think the light's coming on now, but for more people, but 2 decades ago, people weren't paying attention to wildfire. They weren't paying attention to river levels, water rations. Those things were important, always have been important. And they're more important now just because they're hitting more people's radar. So when I went freelance, I did 2 things. I niched down so that 90% of what I cover today is all outdoor related. And I also expanded. I joined Outdoor Writers Association of America so that I could grow my reach beyond Idaho and reach regional and then national. And I also added, to expand my reach, I added radio, newspaper, magazine, web. The internet was coming alive and I could see how they were all going to mesh together. And if I worked for everyone, I wasn't owned by one TV station, I could expand my reach even more. So those were the aha moments. It was when I niched down to outdoors and also expanded my reach by writing for, working for all outlets and not just one outlet.
I love that. And I'm curious, as you had that moment saying, rather than being working, having a job, working for a paycheck, to I'm going to be on my own and have my own business and create my own content and be able to sell, market, brand it. Was there a moment for you when you said, I've had enough, I'm going to go do this? Was that decision made for you? Was there a kind of a path that, you know, by the end of this year, I'm going to give notice and I'm going to start to ramp up this work I'm already doing? Kind of maybe perhaps it was a side hustle a little bit, and then you decided, oh, I'm going out on my own.
There's not there when you work in a newsroom for TV news, there are a lot of ugly days.
Yeah.
And those ugly days add up. And it wasn't like I just walked out one day and said, I'm done with this. And it wasn't like I came out the gate saying, I'm going to be my own boss either. I put in a decade of time in TV newsrooms and sometimes some horrible conditions. And people don't really see journalists that way. They think it's a glamorous lifestyle, but it's far from it. And it's a lot of hours for not a lot of money. And that really wasn't what mattered to me. It was doing the job that I'd always wanted to do, regardless of the money. And so when I decided to go on my own, there was a few significant things that happened. I had a decade under my belt of working for someone else. And I worked in small market TV for some of those years. So that meant I had to learn how to do everything. I knew how to do weather. I knew how to run the teleprompter. But I also knew how to run a camera. I knew how to shoot my story. I knew how to write my story. I knew how to edit my story. It took a decade of working for everyone else, grueling hours, plenty more than 40 hours a week. But I had to do all that time to get enough under my belt to go on my own. Even the ugliest day in those newsrooms, I learned something that now helps me run my own business with Tightline Media.
Sure.
So I would never say, you know, there should be, you can make mistakes, but there should be no regrets about what you're trying to do. I have no regrets, even for the ugliest days in the newsroom, because I learned something that's helping me now. At the 10-year mark, I ended my TV contract and I had my first son and I had a non-compete, which means if I want to stay in the city that I live in, which is Idaho Falls, Idaho, I wanted to stay in Idaho. If I wanted to stay here, I couldn't work for any other TV news outlet while I stayed here. That was for a year. As soon as that year was up, I started Tightline Media. So I knew what I was doing when I did it. And I had a plan. I just had to write out the time. And going freelance meant that if I wanted to work for the stations here, I could. But at a certain point in a market like Idaho for media, Idaho is not a heavy hitter. We are a heavy hitter for outdoors and recreation, but for media markets, not so much. There's a lot bigger cities in here, hundreds of them. And so I was staying here because of the access I had to the outdoors and the stories I wanted to cover. I wasn't staying here for market size, so I quickly outgrew the market I lived in, but it makes sense to stay here. I can work in Yellowstone, leave in the morning, be there at lunchtime, shoot everything I need, and be home by dinner. Some people will never even see Yellowstone in their lifetime. So there's some access that I get here that I'm not going to find anywhere else. I cover stories about grizzly bears. No one else gets to do that because they don't live anywhere else. So there was conscious reasons for staying here well beyond market size. Although I recognized that working in a small market size to start helped me learn everything I needed to do my job on my own.
Sure. Sure. Now, as you went out on your own, start to create the stories that you wanted to create. And by the way, this idea that I'm going to get up early, drive to Yellowstone, do my shooting, come home, be time for dinner. That's kind of neat. I mean, it is neat. So I haven't seen Yellowstone, but I do have national parks on my list. So I'm curious now, as you started this business, Tightline Media, what are some of the projects that have really, I mean, every project is special in its own way, but talk to us about some of the major projects that you've been working on and the impact, because I mean, a lot of what you're doing is helping to educate people like me who grew up in the Midwest. Well, more than just the Midwest, you know, people for me, like me and living in Las Vegas, who perhaps take water for granted. There's a lot of impact to the work that you're doing. So talk to us a little bit about that and the work at Tightline Media.
Over the years, I've done some significant projects, and they range from water wars to wildfires, public lands to access to those public lands, and endangered species. And there's some significant stories in all those areas. I mean, we covered bald eagles. I grew up thinking bald eagles were going to disappear by the time I was an adult. And now there's a nest by my neighborhood that my boys watch every day. That's a significant shift in humanity's priorities. Grizzly bears, same thing. You know, they're still on the endangered species list, but we have a lot more of them than we did when I was little. And now maybe we're going to see that happen with salmon. So my goal on any story is, when you say, you know, what's your favorite story? My favorite story is the one I'm working on right now, because that's the most important thing and I want to be all in on it. And I want it to matter. So the goal is figure out how to make people key in on it. Everybody has so many things they're worrying about. They're worrying about paying their mortgage. Even simpler, they're worrying about how to put food on the table tonight. And they have a lot of other things going on in their life. So you've got to figure out how to make them key in on what matters in our environment of natural resources and how that plays in on their life. Once you can figure out why it should matter to them and help them understand why it should matter to them, then they're going to key in versus checking out. If people are checking out on my stories, I shouldn't be doing them. So I want people to check, to key in on what we're talking about here and realize why it matters. And that's part of building that story. I don't want to tell you what to think on an issue. I just want you to think. So over the years, there's been a lot of times when the assignment has come and someone has said, this is what we want you to cover, go. Now that I'm into 15 years as a freelancer with Tightline Media, I'm kind of changing the way I'm steering the ship. And it's an interesting position to be in, because it seems like I'm evolving again as a business, just like we as a society are evolving as far as how we appreciate our natural resources and realize the value that they hold for our livelihoods. And so this time, in particular, for following salmon migration from the ocean to Idaho, I saw a need for that concept as a story 5 years ago. And I thought, I was at the end of the 850-mile journey in central Idaho wilderness, looking at a Chinook salmon for the first time in my life. I'm a fisher. It's a fish I cannot fish for. I cannot touch it because it's protected by the Endangered Species Act. And it's a fish that's disappearing. And I thought, how do I show this journey to the whole world and not just the finish line? I want to know what the whole journey looks like. And then I want to show everyone else what it looks like so that they understand that these magnificent migrations of wild animals are still going on right under our feet. Despite all of our pressure, the wild is still trying to do its thing. And just the recognition of the fact that there is still wild animals and wild country with all of our domesticated pressures on top of them, it's remarkable. So that was where I saw a shift. Instead of someone coming to me and saying, here's what we want you to do, go cover it, I started going out and saying, this is an issue that's going to be really important as these fish disappear. This is something that we should try to cover. How do I get people to pay attention so I can cover it? And it's kind of changed the funding model for assignments, but it's an interesting change and I like it. And now, you know, it took me 3 years to brainstorm it. And I went on the road last year to shoot the whole migration route from the Pacific Ocean to Idaho. And this year, the film will come out. So it takes some doing and some time to change how you may do business within your own business model. But the beauty is when you're doing it on your own to get to that success mark, you can turn that ship a lot quicker when it's you navigating everything versus 100 people above you as a manager telling you how to navigate.
Yeah, and I love the fact that even though it is just you, you are also in a position of saying yes and no. You know, you get the story idea, we want you to go do this. Well, that's nice. That's not me. I mean, I do that from a coaching perspective. I may get a, you know, I was asked to facilitate a 2-day retreat. It's like, that's just not me. You want me to coach a team on leadership and do a workshop on behavioral-based communication? Yeah, I'll do that. But 2 days, that's not me. So I'll say, you need to meet my friend Tim. He'll do it.
Okay. Well, I think the other side of that is recognizing what's in your wheelhouse.
Exactly.
Sticking with it. You know, when I'm covering salmon migration, I have in my head this map that shows what, how 3 states, 4 rivers, how far these fish swim. And I want that to be in 3D and I want it to move across the screen. I'm not the person to build that. I recognize that. I outsource that. I have someone that builds my animated map.
Right.
So you recognize what's outside your wheelhouse. But on the other hand, own what's in your wheelhouse. When right. someone says, I want you to write 2,000 word story that's requiring tons of research and I'm going to pay you a nickel per word.
No.
That's not going to pay my mortgage. Everyone thinks that you can press the red button so that they can also do your job. Stand next to me. Your shot is not going to look like my shot when we push the record button. And there's a lot of skills that go into that. And even putting words on paper. People think they can structure a sentence. No biggie. Go ahead. Okay, you go try to earn money for those words then. And if you're going to expect me to work for free just because I'm a freelancer, that's not how it works. This is my profession, not a hobby. This is how I feed my family. I cannot accept work that doesn't pay a fair wage.
Sure.
And that's a hard line to draw sometimes for people. You have to be careful about respecting your own craft and not taking low pay just because you think you should take the work versus nothing. It's a juggle.
That's sage advice. And I mean, I see that even in my own profession. I'm curious, so you have a number of books out and you have the documentary Ocean to Idaho. That's going to be premiering in August. When we say premiering is going to be on Netflix, Hulu. Where am I going to go see it?
The premiere for Ocean to Idaho will happen in person at locations. So I'm based in Idaho Falls, Idaho.
Okay.
There's a premiere in Idaho in August.
Okay.
I would love to tell you I have Hulu and Netflix figured out. I do not have them figured out.
Okay.
But I also work for PBS stations. I shoot shows for Idaho Public Television. So I know I have PBS station contracts and licensing agreements figured out. So those are in the works. And that's the world I know. To get into Netflix, I probably need an agent. That's what it comes down to. And I don't have an agent. And then what I'll do with the premiere is it will have special showings in screen and virtually. Organizations can host film screenings. It will go to film festivals. There's a whole bunch of ways it will roll out this later this summer and through the rest of the year. And then I'll also offer virtual screenings online where you can buy a movie ticket and watch it at your house and I'll send you a link. So there's ways to reach the audience without having to have Netflix. But I'll be honest, I've looked at it. I just haven't cracked that Netflix nut yet.
Gotcha. Well, we're definitely going to do our part to help you get the word out for the documentary. And I am definitely looking forward to it. I'm thinking, how long a drive is it to Idaho Falls?
But, oh, you're not far. I've gone down to Vegas for hockey and for sunshine in the winter.
Yeah,
you're probably about 9 hours.
Okay, that's good to know. That's good to know. So looking back at your journey, what would you tell your younger self? Anything different, or is there a lesson learned, or is it, Chris, you got this? That was my gotcha question, by the way.
That is a good gotcha. I'll flip it. I'll say it's for not for my younger self, but for everyone's younger self. And that's at whatever age you're at, this applies. I want you to work for it rather than wish for it. That's as clear as I can make it. I mean, we can wish for everything and end up with nothing. So go for it. Whatever it is you want to do, go after it 100%. And it better not be easy or it won't be worth it. So work for it rather than wish for it.
Fantastic. Now, Chris, if our listeners would like to learn more about you and your work, where's the best places for them to go?
Oh, please visit me at tightlinemedia.com. You'll see video about salmon for Ocean to Idaho. You'll see books. You'll see all kinds of other stories that can go there that I collect for other outlets that I work for. And if you want a little more personal interaction than the website, you go to social media and just search for Chris Milgate. I'm on all platforms and I talk about all kinds of things, personal and professional. So you'll get some insight there that I think a lot of times before social media that people didn't get out of professionals. And that backstory is just as important today. It's what makes us all human. And people want to know, you know, what are you struggling with? I will tell you what I'm struggling with. You'll see it. And so social media is another way to interact with me.
You know, I love that. And I wholeheartedly agree about it's a great way to have a different lens into the people who we want to get to know, even people who I may never meet, you know, face to face. But the fact that they're on social media, they're being open about, you know, their work, their life, what they're going through. And I appreciate that. And, you know, frankly, Instagram is a great platform for that. And I know you're on Facebook and also on Twitter. So definitely we're going to provide all the backlinks to your website as well as to your social sites. And, you know, also to the, you know, the book pages on Amazon for, you know, My Place Among Men, that was your first book. Now your second book, My Place Among Fish. And this is about this journey with the document. Is this the book aspect of the documentary or is this another part, another journey that you are on to create this work?
My Place Among Fish is a book that is the backstory on what it was like to travel solo during the pandemic, shooting the film Ocean to Idaho. I lived and worked out of a truck camper combo all summer. And I was I can't even tell you what Oregon looks like with people, because when I was there, it was shut down. I had to have special clearance to be there. I self-isolated in my own truck and camper. Nobody could come in. And I met people for interviews, but I kept my distance and wore masks and kept everybody in a safe environment so I could pull off this journey. And people watched that road trip and liked that last summer. And so when I started editing the film, quite honestly, what happened is the fish fell apart on the migration, and so did I. So by the time we get to mile 850, which is the finish line for these fish that come all the way back to spawn in Idaho and then they die, they look terrible. They're falling apart. And I fell apart on the journey as well. I had broken cameras, I had stitches. And people were fascinated with that whole struggle. So as I'm editing the film and I'm wanting the film to be about salmon, I realized that the things that I went through that I did not expect really started to overshadow the salmon struggle. And so I am not in the film. I pull all of my struggles out and I put them in the book as the backstory for what it was like to follow fish 850 miles during the pandemic with all kinds of unexpected challenges you would never even imagine. And that's what's in the book.
Fantastic. Well, I am definitely looking forward to some enjoyable reading in my future, and especially the documentary. Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I am extremely grateful for you being able to take the time to join me and our listeners on Success Insight in the Outdoor Adventure Series. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we have just been chatting with Chris Milgate. She's an outdoor journalist who covers outdoor and natural resource stories for both print and video media outlets. And she is the founder of Tightline Media, and really just a fascinating story of her journey and passion and putting the great outdoors on the radar, on the front burner, so to speak. You know, as our world changes, there's so many pressures, whether it's the natural pressures of the salmon migration from the ocean, the 800 and some miles to their spawning grounds, or just the survival of whether it's the wolves, the bears. having water to drink. I mean, here in the Southwest, we're already experiencing 10-year drought level conditions, and the fires are already starting. And there's just so much going on. And Chris's work is really creating a lens for people like me who are not, or others who are not fully aware of all the implications of what's going on in nature and the outdoors. So hopefully you enjoyed today's episode. Fascinating lady, and really check out her books, My Place Among Men. We didn't talk too much about that. I'm hoping she went into a little bit of the beard story, or I know she had a bear story somewhere. We didn't go into that either. Maybe we'll have another podcast with her. But her second book is My Place Among Fish, which is her journey of the quarantining last year as she was filming this journey of the ocean migration of the salmon. And of course, her documentary, which is going to be premiering in August, Ocean to Idaho. So we will provide as many backlinks up as soon as we can. And we'll definitely share those with the network once you know the links are established where you can go and watch Ocean to Idaho. So again, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Do let us know. You can visit us on successinsightpodcast.com. We're on Facebook and LinkedIn, our Success Insight podcast pages. We're on all the major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and especially Spotify, where we have our outdoor adventure playlist where Chris's episode will also reside. So you can not only hear this episode with Chris, but all the other episodes that we have kind of bucketed under the outdoor adventure moniker. So folks, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, go out there, have a phenomenal day, and we will see you on the next episode of the Success Insight Podcast and the Outdoor Adventure Series. Take care now.
Success Insight is a production of Fox Coaching and First Story Strategies. Find us online, successinsightpodcast.com.